on weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
And a big shout out to Better John and the Doc Martin for this evening's entertainment earlier on. It's Tuesday the 30th of July and you're listening to Game On with me, Andrew O'Connor. Coming up between now and the new music show at Rachel May Hannon at 7 o'clock, we'll get all the latest news from the Olympics in Paris and we'll get even more excited about Daniel Whiffen's medal chances in the pool tonight. Paul Curry joins me in studio to keep a very close eye, or two eyes even, on Shamrock Rovers' Champions League qualifier in Prague, which is just underway, and we get all the latest news and rumours from the murky world of soccer transfers as pre-season ramps up for most European leagues. And with the brief Irish summer in full swing, however briefly, we'll keep an eye on one of the most popular events of the Irish sporting calendar as Don McLean gives us the latest news from day two of the Galway races. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or contact us for free on WhatsApp 087 187 9200. I'm joined in studio by my friend Paul Curry. Good evening, Paul. And a very happy Sunday, Tuesday to you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Love Before we go to Paris, what's the latest from the Epet Arena close to the centre of Prague, where Shamrock Rovers are in action, trailing 2-0 from the first leg?
Very, very difficult game last week in Tala, but I tell you what, Andrew, Shamrock Rovers have started really well in the opening 5 minutes. They've made two changes from last week. Aaron Green comes in for the injured John Kenny and Lee Grace comes in for Dan Cleary, and they've started really well. They've had two corners in the opening 5 minutes. They played a large part of the opening five in the Sparta Prague half. And if they continue along this sort of trajectory, they'll be doing very well. But I think it's going to be a very difficult night ahead. Like, Sparta Prague are literally stacked with internationals throughout their team. Pitch looks absolutely perfect. It looks like a warm conditions. And on the basis of what we saw from Sparta Prague last week, they are a top, top team.
But Rovers giving it a good go. If they got a goal back in that first half, would you give them a momentum change chance?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if they scored first, irrespective of when that is within the 90 minutes, it certainly gives them some form of chance within the tie. But I think just on the basis of what we saw between the two sides last week, you would have to fancy Sparta Prague tonight, even over 90 minutes, and ultimately to go through over the two legs. But maybe for Shamrock Rovers, it's about building confidence then. If they were to come out of this tie, they'll either play Celje or Slovan Bratislava in the Europa League, and a good performance tonight could really build towards next week's occasion. But on the basis of the first 6 minutes, I think Stephen Bradley will be absolutely delighted with what he's seen.
Okay, well, Paul's going to be keeping a close eye, or two eyes as I said already, on that game, and we're going to talk a lot more football with Mark Langdon as well, and we're going to preview the Conference League games on Thursday between St. Pat's and Vaduz and Zurich and Shells. Okay, without further ado, and because Paul is much better at French than me,
I can't believe you're making me do this, but anyway, allons à Paris maintenant pour avoir les dernières nouvelles du quatrième jeu des Jeux Olympiques.
And as we say, bonsoir, Adrian Eames.
Well, I'll just settle for good evening. Go on, give us the full, come on, Curry, give us the full translation of that. Mon ami.
I called, but I won't, Adrian. The latest news from the fourth day of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, let's get into it. Let's hit the ground running. And in fact, well, not really a day for running because the temperatures in Paris today absolutely sky high in the high 30s. But we're looking forward now to more action in the cool of the pool with Daniel Whiffen poised and ready to deliver in swimming. Last night, Mona McSharry from North County Sligo swam superbly to take a bronze medal home, Ireland's first of the Games. And now the attention switches to Whiffen, who is from Mahoran on the Armagh Down border. He goes in the final of the 800 metres freestyle just after 8 o'clock this evening. Whiffen is the world champion and was the fastest of the qualifiers in a time of 7 minutes 41.53, so he's in lane 4, ideal position. We're joined by John Kenny. John, we talked yesterday about how impressive he was in making the final. He seems like a nice, cool fella, very calm and controlled, and it looks like he's ready for the moment. Would that be accurate and fair?
Yeah, one thing I noticed about him in his heat is that he didn't go to the legs for the last 100. Normally, these swimmers will go from their just relaxing kind of kick using the arms for the first 700 metres or so, and then turn on the outboard motors, as they call it, by going into a six-speed kick. He didn't do that at all, and he looks absolutely comfortable, the 23-year-old, in winning his heat. And he knocked out one of the great Australians as well, so, you know, he's in great nick. He's the world champion in this event, also the 1500, so you'd have to say he's favoured for gold.
Okay, so who are the likely challengers to him?
Bobby Fink is the defending champion. He missed the World Championships earlier on this year, didn't go up against Whiffen, and maybe that's what his thinking was, that he was going to wait and see how he get on here. Whiffen is the leading qualifier. Fink is only down in fifth place. He goes in lane number two, but he's the defending champion, the 24-year-old. He's defending champion in the 800 and the 1500. And the likes of Elijah Whittington as well, keep an eye out for him, the man from the Gold Coast. He's already won a silver medal in the 400 metres freestyle, so he'll be a threat. And the young Tunisian, Ahmed Jouadi, the 19-year-old, he's making his debut here at the Olympic Games. Doesn't have a lot of form, but from what we've seen in his heat, he looks a potential threat. But I'll reiterate once again, I think Daniel Whiffen is the gold medal favourite. He's the fastest qualifier, and if he just keeps it together and he's a cool, calm and collected customer, I think he can go on and win a gold medal.
And there was lots of Irish support last night for Mona McSharry. I imagine it'll be similar tonight, will it?
Yeah, I'd say the crowd from Sligo certainly brought their colour here last night. Might be a bit more reserved from Daniel Whiffen's point of view, because he has other races and other mountains to climb here, especially with the 1500 this coming Sunday. But Daniel, Nathan will be here, the twin brother as well, and the family cheering him on. And Giorgio Paltrinieri is another one I should have mentioned too. He's a distance swimmer. He's already competed here in the 400, but he's more of a 10k open water swim specialist. So whether he can transfer that to the shorter 800, that remains to be seen.
And John, now that we've mentioned Mona, what a special night that was for her. How impressed were you?
It was an incredible swim. I mean, she only won that bronze medal by 0.01, 0.02 of a second, beating the great Lily King, who didn't get a medal. It was a real battle royal down the last 25 metres, and for some years now in international competition in the past, Mona has struggled in the second half of the race, but not this time. We saw her coming through the heat semi-finals and indeed in the final with the blistering last 25, and that's what got her the medal. It was a real blanket finish that gave the South African the gold medal and the Chinese the silver, but just that fingernail touch from our own Mona McSharry gave her the gold medal. And hopefully that'll give her the confidence now with the 200, because she brought her time down from 2.24 to about a 2.21. If she can go below that again, she'll have a chance of at least making a final there.
Yeah, it could be another special night for Irish swimming. It would be remarkable, wouldn't it, to win two medals over the course of 24 hours. Not getting ahead of ourselves, but that's some tasty prospect.
It certainly is, and to have a man sitting at the top of the pile as the gold medal favourite is something else as well. We saw the likes, you know, Ellen Walsh made a final, finished in seventh coming into the final, and finished in eighth place overall, a little bit slow and disappointing in her time. And that's the kind of criteria we've been thinking, you know, if we get an Olympic final, that would be absolutely marvellous. And Mona McSharry did it 3 years ago in Tokyo as well. But now we're moving forward. We have swimmers who are genuine medal contenders. McSharry proved it last night, and hopefully Whiffen will do the same this evening.
Okay, well, we hope for the best. John Kenny, many thanks for joining us from La Défense. And Daniel Whiffen in the pool a little after 8 o'clock. The final, of course, live on RT Radio 1 with John Creedon, and also available on RT 2 television. It promises to be quite a night. But let's stay at the pool, because a few minutes ago, Claire McNamara caught up with Daniel's brother Nathan. She asked him how he thinks Daniel is feeling this evening ahead of the race.
To be honest, I don't think he's even thinking about the race right now. Well, I think we've still got like 2.5 hours to go or something. So he's probably just sitting there watching TikTok or something. I don't know.
He really comes across as a very cool and calm customer.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a family trait. I don't know. But I think he's just, we just don't really overthink things. And I think when people start to overthink stuff, then that's where people get nervous. And if you just don't really think, then you don't get nervous.
Are you confident he's going to do it tonight?
Oh, I am very confident. Yeah, I think it'll be a very good race.
Who do you think are his main rivals to look out for?
Well, obviously you've got to look at the defending Olympic champion, Bobby Fink. He's anybody's rival. He's got the fastest PB, I believe, in there. And then Daniel's the second fastest PB. And he looked the best in the heats, in my opinion. He looked the most controlled. So, yeah, that's really all I can say.
And what are you like when you're watching the race as it's going on?
I do not like to watch the race, to be honest. I'll be watching it, but like I'll be sitting there, I'll be really nervous. Because, you know, we can't control anything. He's the only one who can. So it really depends on what he wants to do on the day.
Well, that's Nathan, who himself is a pretty nifty swimmer, speaking to Claire McNamara just a few moments ago. On to rowing, and Philip Doyle and Dara Lynch shaping up really well. They're into the double sculls final. They won their semi and advanced to the final on Thursday after posting the fastest time over the two semi-finals, 6:13.14. Zoe Hyde and Alison Bergen were fifth in the women's double sculls semi-finals. They go into the B final. Emily Hegarty, Natalie Long, Emer Lam and Imogen Magner finished fourth in the women's four repechage, and will take part in the B final. In Marseille, another great day on the waters for Robert Dixon and Sean Waddelove in the skiff, with just three races to go before the final. They're lying second. The top 10 will qualify after tomorrow's final day of sailing. Actually, in Marseille, sailors donned ice vests today to beat the heat, because it was absolutely soaring in the south of France. On now to badminton, and bad luck really for Rachel Darrah from Raphoe in County Donegal. Goal. She lost her first pool match 2-1 to Janjira Stradelman of Switzerland. Rachel took the first game 21-13, looked really impressive. The second game, though, was pivotal. It lasted just over half an hour, with Stradelman winning it 24-22. Great second game, first to 21, of course, but you have to be ahead by two, so it turned into quite a battle, but she lost out. Rachel will be back in action tomorrow. She actually, by the way, is a niece of three-time Olympian Chloe McGee. Stradelman, mind you, a medalist at the European Games last summer, so a very good performance, you'd have to say, from Rachel Darrah from Donegal. On now to canoe slalom. Noel Hendrick is through to the men's K1 semis. He picked up a semi penalty at the top section and then really came alive. Some great paddling after that. We're joined by Hannah Craig. Hannah, how good was Noel in making it through to the semi-finals?
Oh, we always expected Noel to be going to the semis, but he made it very difficult for himself during that first run. He picked up 5 penalties in his first run, which adds 10 seconds to your time. That is something that he never does. Very few athletes would actually do that. So his performance was very under par in the first run. And then when he was at the start line, he knew that he had to really have a good performance in the second run, because he wouldn't be through from the result of his first run. Best out of the two runs kind. So he had a very iffy start, as in he touched gate 2, and then he turned his boat at gate 5 in a direction he wasn't meant to, and then from that point onwards he came alight and he really just produced some incredible paddling, and you could see it as he crossed that finish line, the level of relief and excitement, because it wasn't the plan that his Olympic dream would be day over at the heats. Never. He's really aiming for a final.
Okay, well, let's hear from Noel. You caught up with him shortly afterwards.
It was hard. I think everyone was super nervous before the first runs. I think we'd had such a long build-up where we'd seen everyone else compete, and we've been looking at the course the last few days. But I just went out there attacking, and I knew I had to attack from the get-go. And I picked up more touches. I knew I picked up 2 in the middle of it, and I only realised afterwards that I picked up 5. And I think I knew the pace was there, and I really wanted to attack, and I didn't want to freeze up. So when we were planning for the second one, we said we can't lay off, you know, we need to attack still. And I found it really difficult up the top of the pool, and waiting for the second runs, all I could hear was that Noel Hendrick needed to improve his time. He's on the bubble, he needs to improve his time. And I found that really hard to listen to right before your second run. So I just went out and I laid it down, and I had a big mess up in the middle. And I knew from that point on I had to have near enough the run of my life, and I went hard at it. I tried, the crowd was really intense, but I tried not to let it get to my head, and I kept pushing and taking risks all the way to the bottom. And thankfully I crossed the line. I was delighted to cross the line and knew I'd made it in. But I'm looking forward to a reset of the standings come the semi-final the day after tomorrow, and look forward to getting out on the course again.
Yeah, you actually touched gate 2 on your second run and you span gate 5, which I guess was not the plan. I'd love to see the splits from there onwards. It was like all of a sudden your Olympic flame came alight. What, because you went tighter on your lines, were you making that choice as you were going along?
I think the plan was always to go intense, but it's more like your commitment. I think you'll see a lot of paddlers, and I'm sure I've been guilty of it in the past as well, where you know you're on a good run about 3/4 of the way down and you start to really protect your run. And I just knew I couldn't do that. And I'm super tired down the bottom in this section, and I just knew I still had to keep pushing and keep pushing, especially in the last upstream, especially the last 2 downs, you just had to keep pushing.
It was all for show and intensity. It was all planned, this, wasn't it, Noel?
Yeah, my hairline will never forgive me for this, but I'm delighted I'm looking forward to a rest this evening, a rest tomorrow, and then we'll be back again the next day.
Oh, that's Noel Hendrick after making it through to the men's K1 semis. Hannah, you mentioned there he's striving now to make the final. Is that a realistic target in your view?
Yes, very much so. Like, his first run, the 10 seconds of penalties, was in a top time running. It was a top 10 running time. So yes, I definitely think he has a final in him. It is a tough field. Like, there's a lot of experience out there. This is his first Olympics. But with the paddling he had from gate 5 onwards on his second run, yes, that would be final time. That would be a run that would get you into the final. So yeah, I think it's very realistic for him to aim for a final the day after tomorrow.
Okay, well, not much joy for Michaela Corcoran. She finished 21st in the women's C1 heats, the top 18 going through to the semi-finals. Hannah spoke to Michaela a short time ago.
It was an incredible privilege. I didn't know until a few weeks ago, and you could see my boat's little rusty looking, and I didn't get as much practice as I would have liked. But I'm just so happy that I got the chance.
From what I saw in your second run, there were some incredible lines, like that gate one, you went in, you smoked it, that whole first section. Like, it is extremely difficult to put it all together technically from beginning to end, but in that second run, there's so much to be proud of. What would you take away from that run?
Yeah, I think I was really happy with the start and some parts. I think in the sections after I had messed up and certain parts that weren't so good, I was really happy with myself that I was able to cover some of it. It's something that I've struggled with a lot this season and before. It's disappointing that this was my performance here, that it was at the Olympics, but I think some of it excites me beyond the sadness. I think it's a good prospect for races to come.
Yeah, and you're 21. It's very young in canoe slalom. Talk about LA and the excitement there.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been on Oklahoma before, and it's a good course, and people are really nice in that town. I'm just really, beyond that, looking forward to getting the chance of 4 years of prep and really having a goal to work towards.
And it's very much a family story. So your father was the first Olympian in C1 men. Your sister is now an Olympian. 3 Olympians in the family. Does your mum feel slightly less left out?
I really hope not. I think she's one of the hardest workers in our family, and I look up to my dad, but just as much I look up to my mom, and she's just as much of an inspiration to me, so I hope not.
Hannah, obviously a very tough day for Michaela.
Yes and no. Like, I think Michaela did really well. Like, she is a very young paddler. She's 21, which is quite young in paddling terms. She's really just committed to being a full-time athlete within the last 3 years. She's trying to put studies in there. So I think Michaela, she had some incredible sections to be very proud of, which is what's very difficult in slalom, is to piece all those bits together. So she has the speed, she has the technique. As she develops towards LA, it's about putting all of that together. So a lot of promising elements in her second run there today, and I think she'll take a lot from this experience that will help her to build towards LA.
All right. I guess it was pretty hot out there, was it?
It was incredibly hot. Like, it was close to 40 degrees, and real field, they were saying over 40 degrees. It is insane. And we were always in there's like clouds building up, and there's a big thunderstorm on its way. So they had to rush the schedule. They brought everything forward to make sure they could run the 2 runs before the thunderstorm came, and also get all the spectators safely off site because it would be very dangerous in a thunderstorm.
Okay. Hannah Craig, many thanks for joining us. All right, on to boxing now. And Jenny Lahan from Ashburn in County Meath is out. She was beaten at 54 kg on a unanimous decision by a very accomplished Chinese boxer. Not great news in terms of hockey. Ireland lost their third match at the Paris Games, this time to India. 2-0 the final score. Very hot conditions, of course, for the players. So rest day for the Irish tomorrow. Then it's Argentina on Thursday at 12:15 before their final pool match against New Zealand on Friday. That game at 4 o'clock. In rugby sevens, Ireland have to settle battle for eighth position. They've been beaten by Great Britain inside the last hour or so, 28 points to 12. Earlier, Ireland lost to France by 19 points to 7. Ireland actually led 7-0 at halftime. Eve Higgins with Ireland's try, which she also converted. By the way, in the bronze medal match at the moment, it's 7 apiece between the United States and Australia. And the final later will be contested by New Zealand and Canada. Tee times for the first two rounds of the men's golf competition have been confirmed. Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, they're scheduled to tee off alongside Ludvig Eber just after 9 o'clock Irish time on Thursday morning in a group that features three of the top four ranked players on the official world rankings. Shane Lowry is out at 10:44. And in equestrian dressage, Abigail Lyle finished 6th in her qualifying group and missed out on a place in the final of the individual dressage Grand Prix qualifier. That, of course, in equestrian. And I can tell you on an international vein, Simone Biles, the most decorated gymnast of all time, currently in action along with the United States team in gymnastics. She's looking to win her 5th Olympic gold medal. Biles hoping to clinch gold in the team final that's been underway for the last hour or so, and currently the United States of America occupying the gold medal position, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Adrian. That was a very comprehensive report on day 4 of the Olympics, and plenty of news, and hopefully more to come when Daniel Whiffen takes his place in the 800 metres final later on after 8 o'clock tonight. Paul, will you be watching that session from the pool?
Oh, I certainly will be. I was absolutely glued to Mona McSherry's race last night, and I mean, what a moment that was, and hopefully Daniel Whiffen can go that little bit further tonight and either pick up a gold or a silver. So fingers crossed, be absolutely glued to us, and it makes for a terrific watch. And John Kenny on the commentary is brilliant.
Indeed, don't tell him whatever you do. A couple of other things that we were both talking about from the Olympics. Tom Pidcock yesterday in the mountain biking, the reigning mountain bike Olympic champion. Of course, he's raced for Ineos in the Tour de France and in some of the Grand Tours over the last couple of years. Went back to Paris, the Olympics, to defend his title. And very, very exciting, I suppose. He was leading and he got a puncture. And then what happened?
Well, he ended up 40 seconds behind. I think it was a Frenchman who went out in front, and he managed to claw his way back from 40 seconds behind to go and retain, I'm pretty certain.
Kept him in the last couple of 100 metres.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous how he was able to come back. I think the French were a little upset about the nature of the overtake. It seemed like they kind of came together over a corner, but
yeah.
Well, that would be the French.
The losers are always annoyed, isn't it? But the winner. But I saw it, and I didn't think there was too much in it. I mean, they were both going into a very small space, and there were two trees beside, and there were the spaces around the trees, but they both want to actually take the tightest angle.
You sound like an expert.
And Pidcock was in he was on that inside line, so he was probably more aggressive than the French guy.
So some of the sports have been brilliant to just watch.
Yeah. What surprised you? You mentioned gymnastics.
I've really liked watching the gymnastics. I watched the Simone Biles documentary in the lead up to Paris, and I guess the journey that she'd been on from Tokyo, and just watching some of the individual and team events from the floor to the bars to the pommel horse. The physique that these men and women are in, Andrew, is just absolutely insane. The muscle mass that they have, the way that they're able to support their body, and it just makes for a really good watch. It seems to be full of drama, particularly when they go from the bars, when they're either swinging from bar to bar or missing bars in between. It makes really good viewing, and Japan came out with the gold ahead of China yesterday. And yeah, it seems like every day you ping pong from sport to sport and you pick up something different along the way.
Yeah, every 10 minutes. What is your favourite Olympic sport so far that you've seen? You can WhatsApp us 087 187 9200, or you can text us on 51552. We're going to talk about soccer, all the transfer news after this break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6:30 in the evening, and before we go over to Mark Langdon, bad news for Shamrock Rovers, Paul Curry.
Yeah, bad news. Sparta Prague have just taken the lead. The goal has come through Olatunji, the Nigerian international. Shamrock Rovers had actually been doing quite well, Andrew, like I had mentioned. They started the first 5-10 minutes quite well. They grew into the game, probably didn't create a huge amount of chances, but were very much kind of in control of possession and seemed to be working their way up the pitch quite well. And it's not necessarily come against the run and play, because Sparta Prague had somewhat got a bit of a grip in the game, but sitting a lot deeper, Shamrock Rovers last 5-10 minutes, and it was just a ball that they cleared. It was a second phase ball into the box, Olatunji 6-7 yards out, unmarked, header into the bottom corner, and that is absolutely the tie done and dusted.
3-0 to Sparta Prague, and it'll be very, very difficult for Shamrock Rovers to get back into it. But not all is lost, as we mentioned earlier on. If and when they do lose that game, they will qualify for the Europa League next qualifying round.
And what you will say is, if they play to the standard that they're at tonight, as opposed to maybe last week where they were a bit loose in possession, particularly the first goal they absolutely gifted Sparta Prague, you can't afford to do that in European football. If they perform like they are tonight against Sergio Slovan Bratislava, they'll certainly give either one of those sides a good run.
Okay, Mark Langdon joins us on the line. Mark, good evening to you.
Oh, good evening, Andrew. You okay?
Yeah, all good. No surprise that Shamrock Rovers, it was sort of probably a little bit too much for them today, but again, hope is not lost. Let's start with the Olympics. I haven't seen a lot of the football Olympic tournament, Mark. You've been keeping a half an eye on it, and you mentioned that Spain lost today.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, lost 2-1 to Egypt, so they finished second in the group. Now, conveniently, that looks like it might avoid France and Argentina, the two other big teams, until the final. So it might be one of them occasions where, in the seniors, of course, they won their group and ended up in a really difficult part of the draw, didn't they, at the Euros, and that didn't stop them. They've now, it looks like they're about to end up in the easier half of the draw. They've picked some decent players. Spain, Buena, who was the top assist maker in La Liga this season. He was part of that Euros squad. He sort of came on and sort of got a few minutes. But generally speaking, the kind of South American teams probably take it more seriously than the European sides. But Spain are probably the one European team that have got a good record in it. But a surprising defeat for them today. Host France have rotated a lot of their squad. They're 1-0 up at the moment against New Zealand.
And why do the South Americans take the Olympics football so seriously? Is it just because it's football and they're crazy about everything football?
Yeah, I mean, there is that. I think it's probably goes back to the fact that, you know, I mean, the Olympics was around, you know, before the World Cup. So, you know, the Olympic football was a big thing, you know, a long time ago before the World Cup came onto the scene. I think it's because they take big pride in sort of youth football, and you're allowed 3 overage players, but the rest of them have got to be under 23. And what happens in South America a lot now is that their players are moving across to Europe at a younger and earlier age. And the kind of the international team, even at youth level, gives them an opportunity to kind of, I suppose, build a culture and kind of who you are as such, because we've seen so many Brazilians, Argentinians coming over to Europe now at sort of 16, 17, 18. And I think that they enjoy coming back for youth football. And, you know, in, say, I know with England that they really struggle to, say, put out their best players in under 20 games, under 19, under 17. If you've got a top player, they won't, you know, quite often the Premier League team will just say no. You know, they can't compete. It's not like that in South America. So Hendrick, who has gone to Real Madrid, he played for Brazil in the qualifying for the Olympics. Brazil actually didn't qualify, finished third behind Paraguay and Argentina. But that, I think, just goes to show how important it is. And there, in the last 10 Olympic finals, there have been 9 South American teams in it. There was an all-South American one 20 years ago, and of the other 10, there was at least one in 8 of those. So it means a lot. It was an obsession for Brazil to win Olympic gold. Argentina have got a brilliant record in it as well. So I think it's the pride and stock that they take in youth football that means the Olympics is almost the pinnacle of that youth football regime.
About an Argentinian in a minute, Mark, but first back to Paul Curry, because there's been an update in Prague and a pretty positive one.
Yeah, well, I said it was done and dusted last time. It doesn't seem that way. Shamrock Rovers have pulled one back to Aaron Green, and they should be 2-1 ahead.
They haven't
read
your script.
They should be 2-1 ahead. I mean, first and foremost, Aaron Green's goal is taken really well. Dylan Watts picks up the ball probably about 50 yards from goal and pings one over the top. Aaron Green takes a touch around the keeper from a very, very tight angle, slides it into the back of the net and bring Shamrock Rovers back into the tie. And literally 45 seconds ago, on the 35 minute mark, Darren Nugent slides in Neil Ferrugia. Neil Ferrugia 1v1 does really well to sort his feet out, but just slides the ball the wrong side of the post. Probably should score if you're being critical of Neil in that situation. He's done really well to break free, but just didn't have the finishing touches. And I mentioned that they're playing well. I'm delighted that they've got something at the end of their play, because the performance 35 minutes in against a really top team in European football is something that Stephen Bradley would be absolutely delighted with. So more of the same, Andrew. If they could lick another goal, it would be brilliant and it would really pull them back into the tie, but you somewhat feel there's probably another gear in Sparta Prague.
Okay, well, Shamrock Rovers still in the Champions League. We haven't relegated them to the Europa League quite as yet. Mark, back to you. You mentioned Argentinian young players, and he mightn't be under 23, but Julian Alvarez, he mentioned he might be on the move after the Olympics.
Yeah, so Julian Alvarez, of course, got a lot of minutes for Manchester City last season, but he himself was frustrated that when it came to the really biggest games, Pep Guardiola, by the end of the season, was choosing different players. It would often be De Bruyne behind Erling Haaland, or Phil Foden would be in those positions as well. So it's difficult for Alvarez, who is a World Cup winner. He's a Copa America winner. He'll hope to be an Olympic gold medalist as well this summer. And he's frustrated with his, not with his minutes, but with that the opportunities to play in the biggest games for Man City. Now, City have got a problem there, because there's no way Alvarez is getting it in ahead of Haaland as the centre forward, and the midfield, with a position that he has started to play, is stacked as well. So whether he's happy doing sort of the kind of, just playing his minutes, I'm not so sure. And may come to the point where he asks Pep Guardiola for a move. There's no way City would want to lose somebody of Alvarez's ability. But generally speaking, Guardiola doesn't like to keep unhappy players at the club. We've seen him shift out a number of big names in the past. So that could be one to watch out for in sort of the closing weeks of the transfer window. Been a slow window so far, but I think if Alvarez was on the market, there'd be a long list of names that would happily take him, because there aren't that many top strikers around.
Is there a feeling, Mark, that he wants to be that number nine?
There is. He just wants to play, so he will play in that kind of 10 position that City have found for him. And he is, though, a finisher and a forward when he plays for Argentina. He plays as a central striker. I think he sees himself as a number nine, as a goal scorer, as somebody that deserves to be playing in Champions League quarterfinals, semi-finals, finals. He's somebody that would walk into most Premier League teams. You look at, say, Chelsea, a look at Arsenal, he would get into both of them, Manchester United. So, I mean, he played for any of the sort of top Premier League sides.
He's go around Europe in exactly the same situation that Gabriel Jesus was in, right?
Yeah, exactly that. And Jesus moved on to Arsenal and actually now finds himself maybe behind Kai Havertz as well. But it's a frustrating place to be. But Haaland isn't going anywhere yet, and you're just not going to displace him. And there aren't many teams in Europe that want to play with two, proper out-and-out strikers. And so Alvarez, I think if he stays at City, he's going to be in exactly the same position this time next year. So definitely one to watch.
Mark, just to talk about Arsenal's business as of yesterday, Fulham, they sold Emile Smith Rowe to Fulham for $27 million, and they bought Calafiori, the great Italian young prospect of a defender, for $42 million. That looks like good Gunners business from the outside.
I think so, yeah. I mean, Smith Rowe is somebody that the fans have got great, they love Smith Rowe and understand why. He's come through at his best when he's fit. He's a nice, silky player, but I don't think he's ever going to become a first team sort of star at Arsenal. I think it was good for him to move on and try to become that main player, if you like, at Fulham, but I don't think it was ever going to happen at Arsenal. And the money was good. And I think Calafiori is a star. He was one of the few players from sort of the Italian side of things that actually came out with his reputation intact after the Euros. And the fact he was suspended for that game against Switzerland, I think, was a big reason why that they crumbled. Calafiori likens his game to John Stones, says that that's the type of defender he is. He can play at left back or as the left-sided centre back, so it gives Arsenal good options, particularly I think at left back, because that was an area I felt that they could have improved on. Had a fantastic season last year, with Bologna, who qualified for the Champions League. Their coach, Thiago Motta, I think he's one to watch out for. He's moved on to Juventus. He definitely improves players, and Calafiori came on a lot for working under Thiago Motta. So I think it's a good move by Arsenal. Left back was one of the kind of, I'd say, two or three positions that they really needed to strengthen, to get closer to Manchester City. And I think the Calafiori, like I say, can play in that position, can also cover for Gabriel or Timber, if needs be, or Saliba in centre half. So, well done to Arsenal. And I think they really fancy their chances this year of stopping Man City making it five in a row.
Well, they definitely have a very strong defence on paper anyway before the start of the season. Mark, you mentioned that it's been a slow transfer window so far, but of course, in every transfer window, there's always a moment where a couple of big signings happen. It could be Osimhen to Chelsea. And after that, money opens up, people have to replace, and it all speeds up a little bit. Do you think Osimhen would be good for Chelsea?
Well, I mean, if Chelsea could sign Osimhen, I mean, that would definitely take them to the next level. The striking position was a big problem last season. Nicholas Jackson missed so many chances in so many big games. Osimhen, I said there weren't many top strikers on the market. Osimhen might be kind of the best one there. There's an issue with Chelsea and sort of PSR, profit and sustainability rules. So if they were to bring him in, they'd have to loan him maybe until the end of this season and put him in next year's books. But if they could get that one done, he's a fantastic striker, got a great goal scoring record, is somebody that is not bad at holding the ball up, but he's, put the ball in front of him and he scores goals and lots of them. He's so much better than what Chelsea have got up front at the moment. But I think, Andrew, what you're saying there about it being a slow summer so far, there's a few reasons for that. One is the Euros and the Copa America, as not long finished, and the top players are still on holiday. The second is PSR rules, which I think is sort of, Premier League teams are the only ones really with money in Europe, and some of them can't spend that money because they're having to tread carefully because of PSR rules. So put the two together and you've got that slow summer. You just need one or two to happen and that will create that domino effect around the Premier League, I think.
We'll touch on Liverpool and Man United in just a second, but news of Everton's confirmation that Everton have bolstered their defence with the signing of Republic of Ireland centre back Jake O'Brien from Lyon today. Does that mean anything for Braithwaite? Will he be one to go? Will he stay?
I think that's the sort of nervousness around Everton, that their fans will be happy to have brought in somebody that, that they'll feel like can bolster their sort of defensive ranks after a very good season, breakthrough season as well, with Lyon. But what does that mean for Braithwaite? Everton, have they got 20 million to spend without bringing in sort of finances elsewhere? It would make you wonder, wouldn't it? I mean, you've already got Tarkowski, you've already got Braithwaite. Would you be spending money on the centre back unless one of them were going, and only one of them has probably got proper market value, really? So it could be a nervous sort of last month for the window for Everton supporters. But I think O'Brien's a fascinating case, really, because wasn't that long ago, really, Crystal Palace loaned him out to Swindon. Don't think there was much hype or hope around him kind of breaking through and making that impact at sort of top flight level. Because Lyon and Crystal Palace have got this close links due to the ownership, he was able to move from Crystal Palace to Lyon, gets into the team, starts playing well, and all of a sudden he's worth 20 million. As you mentioned there, he started to play for Ireland as well and has looked decent. So, a year and a half ago, I don't think I'd even heard of him, and he definitely wasn't going to be sort of quoted at 20 million, but it just goes to show that these sort of multi-club ownership, it's one of the reasons I think why sort of the owners do like it, because you can move players around. And kind of while he might not have got in at Crystal Palace because Anderson and Gaye were doing so well there, he can go to another club within that kind of bubble, and all of a sudden he makes value for the owners overall. So this could be, it looks like good business for everybody. I think Lyon probably happy to get 20 million in the bank, and Everton look like they've got a very promising centre back, and there's nowhere else, very few places else you'd rather be than working for Sean Dyche if you're a centre back, because he makes them better. He plays safety first football that doesn't ask you to defend on the halfway line play to your strengths and generally improve centre-backs.
Yeah, I agree with Mark on that one. I mean, the rise of Jake O'Brien is incredible, Andrew. I mean, to think that he was only playing in the League of Ireland with Cork City not too long ago. I'm not sure Leon were expecting a huge amount of him when they signed him from Crystal Palace. And he's obviously done so well in his 12 months in France that he's opened up an opportunity now to join one of the Premier League's names for a huge fee. I mean, he was linked with a number of other clubs as well, but it's an incredible rise. And it goes to show you that if you can get your moves right and if you can really work on your game, you put two seasons back to back and you put in good solid performances, you can really open up an avenue to some of the top teams in the Premier League. And Ireland as a nation, yes, we might be struggling to produce players, particularly at the top end of the pitch. Centre halves and fullbacks are something that we are producing really well. He's been part of that 21 setup that included the likes of Darragh O'Shea, Liam Scales. Those players have gone on and done really well and have forged really good careers, and it'd be brilliant to see how Jake O'Brien gets on. Yes, he's built very well, but he's improved himself on the ball in the last year or two, and that's a really good sign. I think when he goes there, he might not get in necessarily straight away, but he will certainly make his way into that Everton team.
And briefly, Mark, we don't have a lot of time, but I can't have you on and not ask about Liverpool's lack of activity in the transfer window so far and Man United's couple of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, definitely from Liverpool's point of view, some fans are unhappy with the slow movement. I've explained certainly from the kind of top players, they're just on holiday at the moment. I think they've actually got a very big squad, and where does Harvey Elliott fit into things? And I think there are other issues there really with Trent Alexander-Arnold's contracts. I'd say that's more important than signing any player really. But I think Arne Slot wants to just change the way that Liverpool play. He wants it to be more possession based, and maybe he's just happy to work with the players that he's already got. But I'm sure there is stuff going on in the background. And Manchester United, I mean, new season, same bad luck with them in terms of injuries. I mean, Hoyland and Euro already suffered problems for United. At some stage, you have to wonder if there's something else kind of at play. Are they training right? Are they doing all the things there? But a lot of them are impact injuries. So maybe Erik ten Hag's just really unlucky when it comes to injuries. But it's not been a great summer for them so far.
Mark Langdon, thanks very much for joining us, and we'll hear more from Mark next Tuesday. Paul, before we hit the break, any word from Prague?
Yeah, we're on the stroke of half time here, Andrew, and it is 2-1 to Sparta Prague. It was Ross who got his head on the ball from a really good in-swinging corner, but I think Stephen Bradley, when he reflects on it, to gift a team a goal from a set piece is upsetting, because you're not, I guess, being carved open, and it just, I guess, puts to bed the tie now once and for all.
Okay, after the break, we'll be going to glorious Goodwood and brilliant Ballybrit.
Game on. Racing.
Back to Game On. It is 6:51 as we are joined by Don McLean. Good evening to you, Don.
Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, great. Obviously, we'll go to get the news from Galway in a minute, but I suppose we should start in glorious Goodwood. Kiprios cementing his status as the best player in the land with a comprehensive victory in the Al Shikab Goodwood Cup for Aidan O'Brien.
At the cutaway point, Ryan Moore kicks on Kiprios. Kiprios goes clear by a good couple of lengths. Sweet William Tracy in second, then came Gregory and Trushan, followed by Al Karim inside the final half. It's Kiprios, he's clear by three lengths. He's going to follow up his Ascot Gold Cup success and win his second Al Shikab Goodwood Cup.
Yeah, Don, Aidan O'Brien, six-year-old, the dominant force in the division last year, or in 2022, rather. But that was very impressive today.
Yeah, he was really good, Andrew. Look, he was a warm favourite. He was a shade of odds on. But if you backed him, if you're taking the odds on, you never really had any worries about it. Ryan Moore was so good. I mean, it's the kind of subtleties of Ryan Moore's ride, because he kind of put pressure on the leader early on, and then was able to tuck back, and then had the fast pace that Kiprios likes. Like, this was 2 miles today, the Goodwood Cup. The Ascot Gold Cup is 2.5 miles. We know that he saves that trip. So no, it was great for him to go and do that again. And like Kiprios, Andrew, he's very lucky to get back onto the track. He had a setback after he won the Prix du Cadran in 2022. He won that race by 20 lengths, which is really unusual, obviously, for a flat race. He came back last year, and then this year he's just kind of making up for last time. He's won his four races. He's often not hugely impressive in winning, but he just does as much as he needs to do. But today was probably his most impressive performance of the season so far. He came right away from his rivals, and Ryan Moore was saying afterwards that he's still idles in front. But he was really, really good. Obviously, Aidan O'Brien, his trainer, great to have him back and to get him back. And then he'll probably go on to the Irish St. Ledger now and maybe the Prix du Cadran after that. But look, it's another Goodwood Cup in the bag, as you heard there in commentary. It's the second Goodwood Cup. He won it 2 years ago as well as this year, doing it last year. And now, look, he's just a dominant stayer, isn't he? It's very difficult for the good stayers who are around to get near him now.
Back to Galway, day two. The feature coming up at 7:10 this evening is the Colm Quinn BMW Mile Handicap. We'll get to that in a minute, but you've already had four races in Ballybrit. How have they gone, and has anyone caught your eye?
Yeah, a lot happening so far this evening, Andrew. Like, Gael Mahler won the opening novices hurdle for Adrian Keatley. Adrian Keatley, Irishman, who used to train here, won the Irish Guineas, actually, and now is doing really well in Britain, came back and brought Gael Mahler back. Henry Brooke, I think it was only his second ride at Galway, his first winner there. Then the company sergeant won his beginner's chase under Rachel Blackmore, Dennis Hogan's horse. Like, he's a horse who's been competing in really good company. He ran in the grade one Willow Warm Gold Cup at Ferry House there at the Irish Grand National meeting when he finished fourth behind Spillane's Towers, obviously top class. So he was deserving of getting his beginner's chase win on the board, given a really good ride by Rachel. And then Bubbling, she won the Filly's Maiden. Aidan O'Brien won the Colt's Maiden with Wayne Norton yesterday. He's now won the Filly's Maiden with Bubbling, and she was very good. She came right away from her rivals. And this is a race that has been won by some really good fillies in the past. Purple Lily won it last year, and she finished, I think, third in the Irish Oaks just a couple of weeks ago. Tahira won it in 2022. She's a Group 1 winner. Hermosa won it in 2018, the Guineas winner. Azira won it in 2016, and she went on to win the Blandford Stakes. And she's also the dam of the Oaks winner this year. So it's a race that can produce really good fillies to go on to bigger and better things. And then the race we just had there, the 7 furlong mail, that went to Lucky Out for Tom Mullins and Shamey Heffernan. Tom Mullins getting on the score sheet now, along with Willie Mullins and Tony Mullins yesterday. All the Mullins, Danny Mullins rode a winner yesterday as well. So, but Lucky Out, she was good. She stayed on well and got off the mark. So no, there's plenty going on this evening so far, Andrew.
$120,000 up in a couple of minutes for the 7:10. The Colm Quinn BMW Mile Handicap, is Boo Ye still the favourite?
Yeah, he is, and I think probably a worthy favourite, Andrew. He's a very, very progressive horse of Tom Gibney's. He's won his last two. He won at Ferry House there in June and then went to the Curragh last time, and he was impressive in winning a competitive handicap. He stayed on really well for Gavin Ryan, who rides him again today. He is up in the handicap. He's up from a mark of 88 to 96, so he's £8 higher than he was then, but he won with a wee bit in hand, so you'd think that he can take another step forward. So yeah, look, he's a worthy favourite. Plume Noir is in there as well for Brian Duffy's small trainer, but he won this race 2 years ago at Magishagaga. And Plume Noir, she ran well behind Indigo 5, was maybe a wee bit unlucky at the Curra last time. Casanova's in there for Aidan McGuinness. His horses always have to be respected at Galway, and particularly in this race. And Lady Lunette, I think she's interesting for Ray Cody. She's a filly who has just really hit a little bit of a rich vein of form of late. She wears cheek pieces now. She wore them for the first time at Limerick in June when she only just got beaten by Snellen. She might have been a wee bit unlucky then. And then she went to Leopardstown last time and reversed placings with Snellen, who's a high-class filly of Gavin Cromwell. She's a Chesham Stakes winner at Royal Ascot when she was a juvenile. And Snellen and Shazan, who finished second and third behind Lady Lunette, they went to Goran Park there on Saturday and finished first and second in the conditions race there. So that form has been upheld. And Lady Lunette, she probably won with a wee bit in hand. She got into a wee bit of trouble early in the home straight, but she stayed on really well for Colin Keane, who rode her that day. And again, she's another filly who's higher in the handicap than she was then. She's £8 higher, but I think she can improve at least by a little bit. And Shamey Heffernan, who rides her, he was on the mark just there with Lucky Out. So he's obviously going into the race having ridden a winner. The other interesting thing about this race, Andrew, is that, you know, we talk about Galway and the importance of being drawn low at Galway, but in this race, historically, or in recent history anyway, actually a high draw is an advantage. It's kind of counterintuitive, because you think a high draw, you have to go wider, and you do. But the last eight renewals, or the last seven renewals, have been won by horses drawn 10 or higher. And then last year, the first four home, they were all drawn high, and likewise the year before and the year before that as well. So I think maybe a bit counterintuitively, high draws is the way to go in this race coming up.
Okay. I'm not going to ask you about Thursday's hurdle. I'll do that tomorrow. But a quick word, very quick word, on tomorrow's Tote Galway Plate and Percival Legolois, the deserving favourite.
Yeah, I think so, Andrew. Look, he's a progressive horse. He finished second last time in the EMS Copiers Novices Handicap Chase at the Pointerstown Festival behind the Grand Cote of Barry Connells, and that's a race that towards the Galway Festival. He's improving, and you want a horse who's better than his handicap mark in the Galway Plate, and Percival Legalwa probably is. He's got good form at Galway as well. He's run well a couple of times here. I think in Excelsior Sayre, who is like Percival Legalwa, he's also owned by JP McManus. He's coming over from Britain, Harry Fry's horse. He was progressive at the end of last season too. He ran well in the Plate at the Cheltenham Festival over 2.5, and then he went to the Cheltenham April meeting, and he stayed on really well to beat a horse of Emma Lavelle's Hang In There, who went to Uttoxeter next time and won off a £5 higher mark. So it wouldn't be surprising Harry Fry and JP McManus have had this race in mind in Excelsior Sale since then. Likewise with Percival Legalwa, and probably likewise with an awful lot of horses in the race, Andrew. But in Excelsior Sale, he's got cheek pieces on for the first time tomorrow, and if they elicit just a little bit of improvement, then yeah, he could go well.
Okay, Don McLean, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you tomorrow. We'll leave talk about the Conference League on Thursday. St. Pat's and Shells in action on Thursday. We'll do that tomorrow with Keith Tracy. But a final word from Paul Curry. Rovers, an uphill battle to climb in that second half.
Ah, yeah, that tie is over now, Andrew. Attention will turn to next week's tie in the Europa League, where they will play Celje Slov and Bratislava.
Okay, well, that's all we've time for tonight in Game On. Coming up next, it is the new music show with Rachel May Hannon. The team here are all getting into our budgie smugglers to support Daniel Whiffen after 8. I'll be back tomorrow after 6. Paul, you look well in those.
RTE 2FM.